Hello, and welcome to Pedagogzilla, the pedagogic podcast with the pop culture core. Usually, we are answering a question that looks to understand pedagogy through the lens of various items of geeky pop culture. But today, we are here in Aberystwyth and throwing ourselves at the mercy of a live audience. Can I get some live audience sound? Woo! That's a very live audience for 10 o'clock in the morning. Is 10 o'clock early or late for people these days? I don't know.
It depends.
I mean, Mark's still booting up. Okay, so we'll be asking them to throw their absurd pedagogic questions at us. And if they aren't forthcoming, then lob pedagogies and pop culture items our way. And that's our panel, in the sweaty hope that they are able to blag an answer in the unfavourable conditions of a strict time limit. But before all that, we should introduce ourselves. Hello, I'm Mike Collins. I am a senior learning designer at the Open University. I'm imposter syndrome incarnate, and I'm quite warm, so I've just taken my jumper off. And I am joined, as ever, by my capable co-host.
I'm Mark Childs, senior learning designer. It's still too early in the morning for me. Let me do that again. I'm Mark Childs, senior learning designer at Durham University, and my usual tagline, PhD in education, national teaching fellow.
I'm Liz Ellis. I'm head of school of digital education at Ardney University, and I'm already regretting being here.
And I'm Rebecca Ferguson. I'm professor of learning futures at the Open University, and my tagline is innovator of pedagogies.
So, folks, what are your preposterous pedagogic questions? We are going to be pausing the recording shortly and inviting you to form pairs and start to propound, kick about some ideas for preposterous pedagogic pop culture questions. But please don't feel like they need to be slick. Embrace the jank. They can be absolute garbage, because I guarantee the answers will be. Are we feeling good? And go! So, hopefully you have had the opportunity to start to gestate some preposterous pedagogic and pop culture questions. We would now like to invite you to sling them at our panel of pedagogues.
Hello, I'm Jim, and I'm a learning technologist. Okay, how can Tom use a constructivist approach to catch Jerry?
Oh, such a good question. Okay, does anybody from our panel want to pick this up?
Go on then.
Yes, go on, Liz.
So I think that Tom keeps flailing because he keeps trying to do it on his own. He's there and he's just trying over and over and over again. It's like the worst example of experiential learning ever. So I think in a perfect world, what I would want to do is bring Wile E. Coyote and Tom together. So Wiley's got access to all of the Acme stuff. Tom has got relentless persistence. Jerry is there taunting, and I would really like Jerry caught. So I would imagine I think that's what Tom is missing. Tom is missing somebody to... bounce ideas off of, understand the problem, to work through the problem together, to try and fail, and then try again, and basically to construct that meaning together, even if the meaning is catch that mouse. So that would be probably my suggestion, is I think I would want Wiley in there with Tom, and then if they were able to kill the Roadrunner as well, then that would make... That would make me so happy. Oh, yes.
Sylvester in there as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think Sylvester and Tom would get on better, though, because of them both being cats?
I don't know. I'm knowing cats? No. Although they share a base. They're cats.
Yeah.
They both share a base in the sense that they're hunters. So they've got a shared experience there. But I actually also think that that's probably too much similarity. Mm. They're running into the same problems at the same time. So they're both of them failing in the same way, or not using the word
but
failing.
Should
right?
they be challenging their learning outcome, really? Because, I mean, is this a good learning objective to catch Jerry? I mean, Jerry is a very small mouthful and there's a lot of food in that kitchen.
This is very true.
So I would suspect that when they get together and actually challenge each other's ideas and think about what they're really doing, that they might reframe their learning objectives. So I think what they need is not just constructivism, but reflection.
I like that. Yeah. No, that's quite right, because that is a kitchen full of food. You see the chickens, you see the turkeys, you see the pies, you see all of that stuff.
Much better than that tiny mouse and that tiny little...
Have we done for time? And is that time?
Yes, time.
That's time. Have we answered the question? Did it make sense? B, have we answered it to your satisfaction?
Yes, I'm happy. Happy that, yeah, Jerry can get caught or not get caught, you know? Is that the goal? Is that the learning outcome?
Thank you so much, Jim, for your first question to kick us off. A fabulous question. We're actually able to answer it. That's a relief. Can we throw out for question number two? Who's got question number two? Mary's got the hand up.
Yes. I'll introduce myself first very briefly. I'm Mary. I'm a lecturer in learning and teaching, running our PGCert program here. And I'd like to know, how can new lecturers learn something about learning design from Karate Kid?
So Karate Kid, do you want to just do a very quick summary for the minority of people? Basically, I think anybody born after the year 2000, possibly, who hasn't seen Karate Kid.
Well, the motto with Karate Kid is a little kid who's learning from a master. And the motto is wax on, wax off. That is the sort of motif that comes through that film.
So what can you learning designers learn about learning design from Karate Kid, our panel?
I'm just in the spirit of busking it. So, I mean, I think the thing I probably associate most with new lecturers is the moment when he walks into the rival dojo. He walks in, he knows nothing about karate. All he knows is that he wants to learn. He walks in and they're so unfriendly to him. They are so mean to him. They have no idea. He has no idea. And everybody else is like, oh, what kind of an idiot are you that you don't know? And so there's no respect there for learning at all. And I think that's probably the main thing is when he meets Mr. Miyagi, although even though he doesn't recognize how Mr. Miyagi is teaching him, he is in there. He is immediately put into a learning relationship. So he, you know, so if you were to make the Karate Kid into somebody who is a new lecturer, he's brand new to the space. He knows he wants to teach, but he's not sure how. He's got a certain amount of knowledge, maybe, because he's been through a theoretical process, but he's still got to apply that to practice. Mm-hmm. I guess the main thing is that he has to go in with an attitude of learning, but he also has to be supported by other people around him who have an attitude of learning as well. I think that's what Mr. Miyagi and his name has literally fallen out of my head. I'm so sorry. But that's the relationship. When they're there kind of going wax on, wax off, that's the learning relationship. And that iterativeness is, I think, what you need for a new lecturer who's understanding learning. And you need that in order to therefore also understand learning design.
But I'd say, I mean, I've never seen Karate Kid, I must admit, so I am making this up based on what Liz has just said. But I would say that as a new lecturer, you need to be looking not just for the people who are the experts, but the people who can explain their expertise to you and share that expertise with you and have a sort of open, welcoming attitude. You shouldn't have to struggle through lots of people just getting in your way. You need to find the people who are going to support you and who've got the skills to do that.
I think that's a great point because, and I think that's partly what the, as much as anything, being part of a learning community is about finding the people who share your thoughts and your approach, but also will help you challenge you as well.
And I think we've just hit time, Mary. Oh, a chime. Thank you very much. Has that answered the question to your satisfaction, Mary? Did that make sense?
Yes, it did. And I think we try to do this, create that community, a supportive community. Yeah.
Do you have anything to add to it, Mary? Do you have anything to add from your own reflections?
Actually, I've been thinking about this the last couple of days. It can be easy for us to feel when we're new that our job is to prove ourselves worthy. You know, like show that we're good enough. But actually, we can learn more by asking questions rather than trying to prove ourselves to somebody who's sitting like a judge. People supporting you are not judging you. They're there to help you with whatever it is that you're doing and maybe point you in the right direction or put you in contact with sources or other people. So don't worry about being judged. So I guess with Karate Kid, it's like not trying to be perfect, but being, as you were saying, being open to the learning.
Yeah, and he gets his leg broke by the main kid, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. What does he do? He just kicks him with the other leg. Thank you so much. Okay, can we get another question? We've got another question over here. Thank you very much. And if you could please introduce yourself and... I've never been sure what the secretary is to this bit. Why you're at the university, what you're doing here today.
Okay, I am Akribi and I teach criminology here at the university. I'm a lecturer. My question is, well, I start, it's a question at the end, I promise. So when I was a kid, I found it very frustrating that Ash Ketchum never actually beat any of the gym leaders. He never actually defeated the Pokemon like straightforward in a straightforward way. But he learned through the power of, I don't know, friendship and lesson learning. So I guess, you know, now that I'm a lecturer, I realize that problem solving learning was more appropriate than straightforward fighting. How did Ash Ketchum manage to get all the gym badges through problem solving learning rather than straightforward fighting?
That's an excellent question. And can you just give us a quick, for the people who haven't seen the, I'm guessing this is referring to the original Johto League Pokemon animated series?
Yeah.
Could you just give people who aren't familiar with it a quick summary of what it is?
Well, what lovely they're now getting. Okay, so Ash Ketchum is a boy who wants to become a Pokemon trainer. So he heads off really late in the morning. So he managed to get the final Pokemon available for him, which is a very temperamental Pokemon. And the journey begins. Him and a temperamental Pokemon try to become the best Pokemon friends in the world.
The very best, like
the very
no
best
one ever was.
Has them all, as the song says. But he runs into issues because he is a bit stubborn, and again, his Pokemon is not willing to learn. So he ends up winning badges, like they call them gym badges, which are like, kind of like certificates of ability, I don't know. Less straightforward fighting ways and more creative, usually having to solve a sort of issue with a gym leader and, you know, making friends on the way. I think that makes kind of sense.
Yep, I think that does. So how are our panel feeling? I mean, Rebecca's sitting there. Like, Rebecca's shot forward. She's like, Pokemon,
wait.
Here we go.
Go.
Okay, yes. When my kids were the right age and Pokemon had just come out, we used to watch a lot of Ash Ketchum in a lot of gyms. I would say problem-based learning is not the right approach for Ash because obviously all the Pokemon trainers have got the problem of how do you become the very best? How do you catch them all? I believe Ash has now become the Pokemon master that he always wanted to be. I'm not still watching that series, but I have heard that recently. I would say this is more about authentic learning on authentic situations. So when Ash starts out from Pallet Town, he's got this sort of vague idea about what it is to be a Pokemon trainer, but he gets out of bed late and then he thinks, oh, this is going to be so easy. You know, I just throw a Pokeball and I get any old Pokemon. He throws it at Pidgey and, you know, he fails miserably. So there's a difference between the sort of theory and the sort of view of what you could be able to do as an expert and actually where you start off. And I think you need that authenticity of trying out problems, trying out different approaches, seeing what works. But it's, as you were saying, it's about social constructivism as well. It's about working with other people, looking at what their approaches are, because Misty and Brock have got different techniques that they're bringing. Team Rocket have got a completely different technique they're bringing. It doesn't work as well. So it's looking at what other people are trying in that authentic context and learning from that.
I mean, is it also about, and I said I wasn't going to answer these, but I'm so invested in this one. Is it also about the fallacy of conflating assessment with actual good learning? So the assessment, the actual kind of, the stated assessment in the Pokemon League is to beat the gym leaders. And by doing this, you prove that you are going to become a Pokemon Master and you can challenge the, not the famous five, the Super Three. What are their names? The Elite Four. You can challenge the Elite Four. But Ash manages to do this despite the fact that he doesn't actually complete the assessments in the traditional way. So this might actually be an argument for more inclusive models of assessment and measuring learning outside of traditional assessment models. Sorry, that's my tuppenny bit on that. How are we doing for time, Mary?
I mean, you're pretty close.
In which case, we're fine. Have we answered the question to your satisfaction?
Yeah, absolutely. Now I don't hate Ash.
Okay, that's awesome. Okay, can we get one more question, please? Throw it in.
I'm going to ask a question with My Hero Academia, and could you discuss a little bit of how that series uses experiential learning?
So can you please, for the people at home, because obviously we all know what it is, can you just explain what My Hero Academia is?
No problem. So My Hero Academia is a kind of school-based anime in which you have a world in which 80% of the world has these things called quirks, so they have superpowers. Some of them are very interesting. Some of them are just like, okay, that's not the best power in the world to have. And just kind of looking at the world through this perspective. And then specifically, it's the students that want to become heroes. So they go to school to learn to become heroes. And they get through a lot of, I guess, different storylines, different experiences on their journey to go from amateur to professional hero.
So Right. Is anybody in our panel feeling confident answers? I think I weirdly
just give us the question again. My daughter is going to be so annoyed about this. My daughter does know.
Yeah. So how does My Hero Academia use experiential learning or demonstrate experiential learning? Is that?
Discussing experiential learning in the realm of My Hero Academia. If you know to be like, is it effective or not effective?
Mary, could you start the timer, please? Would our panel like to have a go? I could probably start us off.
Go on then.
I might have something to add here.
Okay, so My Hero Academia is actually a really good example of a genre of manga called shonen manga. It's a manga designed for young boys and it tends to be very battle focused. But there's often kind of like a cadence and a rhythm to it, sort of the particular beats of the story that are characteristic. One of which is that your protagonists will often, they will lose a lot. So they'll be defeated. They'll often be defeated in minor ways, but they will learn. Now, we reflect quickly on the steps of experiential learning, Kolb's experiential learning cycle. They are
concrete experience, reflective observation, abstract conceptualization, and the one where you go back to planning something slightly differently, whatever that one's called.
So what will often happen is, in My Hero Academia, we have basically a superhero academy, and the students are thrown into these horrible battles and tests. The actual pedagogy of it is pretty flaky. However, something they do is they are given a safe space in which to experiment and fail. This is also a principle of playful
active
learning.
Active experimentation.
They are given the space to do it. They do these training exercises. They get beaten up. I mean, Deku, our hero, always pulls through, but he's usually getting quite beaten up in the process. And him and his colleagues will often, or sorry, his classmates will often fail in the process of it. However, they learn from this, and then when the big actual villains appear from outside, they are able to draw on the lessons and the experiences they have got, the plans they have made. They've worked out, oh, sellotape, man, there's a guy who can fire sellotape out of his elbows. That's one of his actual powers. You know, he's able to use it in an actual kind of like contextual battle scenario because he's used his useless power previously.
I need to watch this show.
And it's really good. I read the manga, and it's really excellent. It's absolutely fantastic. It's currently in like its final arc. Liz?
No, I'm just thinking how, so I haven't actually seen this or read this, but it's making me think of Gen V, which is the university kind of follow-on from The Boys, which is a very dark, very grim, very brutal comic and TV program, which is basically about a world in which there are superheroes, but it turns out that they are superheroes because they've been basically augmented as children. And then you've got this university that's dedicated to people to become even better superheroes. But some of the powers are really grim. And where it really kind of, I think, is interesting around experiential learning is because that is a very political program, because they're superheroes, but they're within a community that is not kind of necessarily supporting what they're trying to do. So they're kind of learning, but they're also learning about the environment that they're in and the environment that they're going to have to survive in. And if that doesn't say university and learning and teaching, I don't know what does.
Have we hit time, Mary?
Half a minute left.
Anyone read anything else, or are we happy with that? Are you happy with that? Have we answered your question? Did it make sense?
Yeah, or no, I do like that, or it's made me think of a couple of times in the show of, what did you call it, experimental?
Experiential?
Or no, the other
one. Active experimentation.
Active experimentation, yeah. It was like, oh, okay, now I can see how that happened in the show and how that could apply. So,
yes, once you know the format of shonen, you see it everywhere. Yeah. Thank you so much for that. One more question, and this one we've answered our panel so far. I'd actually like to invite somebody in the audience, if they're feeling brave, to answer the next one. So, would you like to propose a preposterous pedagogic question?
Yeah, really. So, hello, my name is Maxim. I'm from computer science, and I'm a lecturer trying hard to apply active learning to first-year students and failing at that consistently. So, I would like to know a little bit more about active learning. So, what can Pulp Fiction teach us about active language learning?
Okay, I want to throw this one out to the audience, but anybody in the audience like to have a crack answering this? I think it's a great question. Anybody feeling brave want to open up with an experimental answer on this
and
one?
And think about your own experiences of active language learning, how they might connect.
Anybody?
Talking about active language learning, but I can't talk about Pulp Fiction, the film.
Well, let's start with you talking about active language learning then. Mary, let's see if we can construct an answer ourselves in the room.
The key to active learning, as I've been working with it for a while, is to get students to do some kind of an active thinking task. It's not just the doing task. But in order to do that, so they might be reading an article, they might be making something, whatever it is, but they're thinking about something. They have a cognitive task that they do in connection with a behavioral task. So if they might resist that at the beginning if they're not used to it. So the key to making this work would be to have the lecture be very transparent about this is why I'm asking you to do this. This is how it's going to help you, how you're going to use it. and it makes sure that that's done from the very beginning of the year, so that they set their expectations. That would be my tip.
Okay, so that's the active learning. Can somebody summarize Pulp Fiction? Does anybody have what Pulp Fiction is in their sleeve? Looking around the room, people are looking at each other.
Yeah, I can go if you like.
Do it, Mark. Draw them together.
I had a friend who at the time was studying film studies as a master's course, and her lecturer said, everything I've just taught you about film studies, all the rules have just been broken in that movie because there are lots of interweaving cameos. So not only is the narrative being constructed as you watch it, you're faced with a problem as soon as you start watching the movie, which is, hang on, why are these people in this diner? What's going on? Why is this thing happening with people coming in? And they're not really revisited again until right to the end. So I think what Pulp Fiction does as a movie, as opposed to any of the characters within it, is it breaks all of the rules. It's creating the narrative as you're going through it. And it is being made up as it's being produced as well because of the bits that are added after the thing was made. And I think that is what we can do with active learning is, yes, maybe if things don't work or you want to try a completely radical approach, throw out all the rule books and try something a bit different.
So it's construction of a narrative. In active learning being sort of the demonstration of constructivism in that knowledge is constructed rather than, transmitted? Acquired, sorry, transmitted rather than acquired. The narrative of Pulp Fiction is constructed rather than just transmitted.
Yeah, and I think it creates a problem in itself that foregrounds it. So you're constantly having to think about what that narrative is in your head instead of it being transparent to you. So that is kind of the thing that makes that a different movie and a more exciting movie. Liz is wanting to come in
as well. Yeah, very quickly, and wrap this one up.
Really quickly, which is, I just want to say, I agree with you. However, there's one scene, I think, the scene where Harvey Keitel comes in as a cleaner, I think that's probably an area, because I think partly active learning, it does require an active language learning, particularly does require structure. So you have to provide the student with enough structure for them to be able to work within. So you need to actually, as the teacher or the lecturer, you're actually having to work that little bit harder to make sure that they know and understand the space within which they're working. And Harvey Keitel basically comes in and says, okay, you're going to do this, you're going to do this, and you're going to do this. And they're so grateful for the instruction, because it's all been chaos up until that point. And I think that's part of it, is that you want to give students enough space to be able to construct the meaning that they need to and learn what you'd like them to learn. But you can't give them so much space that they're actually just flailing. So if you see them flailing, you need to bring them back again. I think that's the thing with active learning, is I think it's a little bit like the way people talk about agile in software development. It's like, oh, throw out all the rules. It's actually, No, there are rules. No. You just have to understand the rules and you need to support the people who you're trying to.
Oh, yeah, just to clarify, just to bring it back, I know we're running out of time, but I think Pulp Fiction is a good example of where is a bad example of active learning. It's like, because you are lost, the viewer doesn't really know, unless you're actually happy to go on that journey. I think it does alienate a lot of people. So I think it's actually, as far as an example of how does it help you demonstrate active learning, it demonstrates what is bad active learning.
But reservoir dogs is better.
Yeah.
We're running out of time a little bit. That was a very provocative question, but the question is, has the incoherent babble coming from here answered your question? Has it made sense?
So at least it proposed certain different ideas which I would like to think about in this context. So I may also probably link that kind of constructing different, like, constructing a meaning out of the movie. I would like to associate it probably with, like, the way people learn things via, like, linking chunks of ideas to actually get a bigger thing. But this is a different story, I think.
I mean, it was a doozy of a question, as you could tell by the rounds it did of the room. Thank you so much for that. And we're just about coming up to time now, so I'm going to wrap the show up. I just want to give yourselves a round of applause for some fantastic questions and some brilliant blagged answers. Well done, everybody. So hopefully we've answered these questions for you. I'm going to wrap the show up now. So thank you very much for listening. You can subscribe to us on all of your favorite apps, feeds, iTunes, and at our website, pedagogzilla.com. You can also follow us and get in touch via Twitter. I'm at pedagogzilla.
I'm at Mark Childs.
I'm at Liz_Isabella.
And I'm at Rebecca F, where the first E is a 3.
We've been hosted very generously by Aberystwyth. We'd like to extend our thanks to Mary Jacob, who helped coordinate this visit. So thank you very much for listening. We love you all. We'll see you next time on Pedagogzilla. Goodbye now. And can I get a goodbye from everybody in the audience?
Will bow.
Brilliant.